everybody, welcome or welcome back to B&B Anime. I'm Blue. Brad's here.
I'm here. Hi.
as usual. And today we're going to be discussing The Apothecary Diaries, Core 2.
Yeah. But first, we're vain. What have you been up to? I feel like it's been forever since we've sat down to record, and that's because it has been.
Yeah, it has been quite a while. I haven't been doing too much of anything. Just so this kind of past brief period has kind of been the time when we've switched up some stuff with the YouTube content to do with this kind of episode format. So I've been focusing on that quite a bit, of editing out the YouTube videos a lot more, and then keeping all of the rambly fun stuff like we normally talk about strictly on like the audio only platforms, so that makes the YouTube videos shorter and more consumable, but also straight to the point. So if you're listening to this on Spotify or whatever, it doesn't really affect you. And if it's in the YouTube video, it's going to be cut out, so it doesn't affect them at all. So this is just between us and audio-only platforms. Hello, audio-only platforms.
Hello. Hi. You are exclusive. You are important. We love you. Mwah.
So I've been mainly doing that, is just trying to figure out how we want the YouTube videos to work and see, like, feel. Because, yeah, I just don't feel like we were getting into the topics fast enough for a YouTube kind of video. Like, on Spotify, it's fine to be rambly, but on YouTube, people want to get to the nitty-gritty part of the content, like, within the first 2 seconds of the video. So, yeah, switch that up a bit. What else have I been doing? Making memes. I spent a good hour or so making memes earlier today.
I love them. I'm so Thanks. Here for them.
I've been really proud of myself how consistent I've been on posting them as well. Like, they've been going up nearly every day, which for me is like, what the heck, you know?
I'm so proud of you. You do
Thanks.
It.
Thanks. And then just Japanese study, really. And working on my maps. So I'm trying to figure out, like, I love making fantasy maps for like D&D campaigns or just for aesthetics. I think maps and blueprints are two of my favorite styles of artwork that don't really get seen as artwork, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like, I love engineering blueprints. Like, I saw some blueprints the other day of like underground piping system that was going under like roads and cities, and I think they're so cool. I think they look so cool, and I don't think they get appreciated for being artwork. Like, building schematics sometimes do. You get to see, like, architectural drawings, I think, are really beautiful. But, yeah, I love that kind of style, is, like, having them as actual art pieces rather than just, like, reference for what you're going to create with them. So I've been making a lot more maps, and Brad knows that, obviously. I've been building him a digital map for his D&D campaign, which is probably getting to the completion for where we had already previously discussed everything. So anything that gets added on in the next little bit will be things that will be specific to the campaign, which is quite cool. But yeah, so I've been thinking about making physical maps as well, and I was toying with the idea of staining paper and what kind of paper I would use, because I would want it to be a mixed media paper, something that's not as thick as a watercolor paper, because in my head, like, it's usable, right? It's artwork that has to be able to be laid down on a table to use during a campaign, but also put away. So I was like, I can't use a canvas like I would normally do a painting on, because that's really awkward if you're playing a campaign and then you put like a canvas down on the table, like, it doesn't really work. And also the edges, like, that feels quite modern versus like modern canvases. Like, canvas in my head, it doesn't feel like, you know, it doesn't fit the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I don't want to do that. So then I was like, okay, well then I'll try it on paper. And I was like, okay, but I'll have to stain the paper. And I was like, okay, well, then I'll use the watercolor technique where you, like, fix it down and then do a wash over it being, like, stapled or taped onto a wood board. And I was like, that's only going to color one side of it unless I, like, dip it in like a tea dye or something and then staple it onto the board and then let it shrink that way. And then hopefully it won't buckle, but all this kind of stuff. And then I was like, okay, but then it's going to be, then I'll draw on top of that. And I was like, that'll work. But then how will everybody store it? Like if I'm selling paper maps that are being used a lot, they're going to weather with time. And obviously you kind of want that to a certain extent because it fits the aesthetic, but you don't want it also to be, because like these would be expensive. Like I would be spending hours making them. So they wouldn't be cheap campaign maps. They would be expensive art pieces. And so I was like, okay, well then I could frame it and then sell it framed. And then I was like, but then again, you can't really use it easily. So I was having all of these like debates going on in my head, but I think I've settled on using unstretched canvas fabric. So instead of it being like a paint canvas, I wouldn't gesso it. So I wouldn't create that white plasticky surface where you put a layer of paint over your canvas fabric, and I wouldn't stretch it on a wood board. So it would just be a sheet of fabric. And then I was like, okay, well, that's great. So now I'm doing my things on canvas and I've got my calligraphy pens and I'm going to do it on just unstretched canvas fabric. Then I was like, okay, so I will draw it in pencil first. And then I was like, well, if I do that, then I'm going to have to wash it because I have to get rid of those pencil lines and you can't just erase them on fabric. So I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? And that's when I discovered, well, I didn't discover, I thought about heat erase fabric pens that seamstresses use. And I was like, that's the bitch. So now I'm going to be doing all of my rough drawing heat erase fabric pens, then go over it in calligraphy pens, then iron the canvas fabric, and that's how I'm going to end up making my maps. So that's kind of where I spent the rest of this week so far on, is like planning and strategizing how I'm going to make these very expensive art pieces of fantasy maps for D&D campaigns.
Just let me know how much I owe you for Othalia and I will send you the money post haste.
You don't owe me shite.
Bullshit.
For Othalia.
You will get money in some way, shape, form, or fashion, even if I had to stick it in an envelope and fill it full of fucking confetti dicks.
Nah, my guy, we're literally going to Japan together. All of that money is getting saved for the trip. Yes.
Oh, well. I'll win this one way or another, damn it.
You will not. You will not.
It's fine. It's fine. It's all fine.
But yeah, that's kind of where I've been at. It's just chugging away at chugging?
No, that works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, keep chugging along, that type of thing.
That's,
you know,
it's like that's a choo-choo train. Yeah. But then I just got the chugging definition for like drinking really quickly and couldn't get that out of my head. And I was like, is that the same word?
And tell me you have ADHD without telling me you have ADHD.
True. But yeah, so then I've just been chugging away at my Japanese as well and doing adjective, what do I want to say? Conjunctions? That's not the word that I'm looking for. Changing adjectives into their present and past tense and negative and affirmative tenses, I think. Is what I'm trying to say. I've done verbs. We're into adjectives. We're getting through this.
You do the thing. I have done nothing. That's then okay. Again, you know how busy I've been for the past fucking busy. 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks. I don't know. It's been a long time since we sat and done this. I've missed this so very much.
Yeah, it's been forever.
It's, oh, God. But I don't think that y'all that listen to this have, like, you might think I'm just bullshitting whatever I say, like, just how much sitting down and doing this every week means to me. Oh, but God, it's been fucking rough. It's been a long, God, when did I step into my new role? Month and a half? Mm-hmm. I've been getting my ass kicked at work for the past month and a half because we are short staffed. My only other staff has been out doing things all day. So I'm left to run everything by myself and it's getting into super busy season. So getting my ass kicked, trying to get in better shape, because although round is a shape, it's not the shape I want to be in whenever I go to Japan. And then just, God, so much. And not only that, but we're in April. We know what that means. Time for new anime season. And I have been watching so much shit, so much really, really, really good shit, but just watching so much. But I can say the new Spice and Wolf is amazing. Mm-hmm. Bartender is amazing. Konosuba is exactly the breath of fresh air that I needed in my life. I was sitting down watching episode 2. I'm about 3/4 of the way finished by the time Blue joined the call. And so it's been such a breath of fresh air. I was expecting Blue to pop in while I was laughing my ass off, because the episode is so funny. Just in general, it's great. It's a great season for anime whenever it kind of didn't have high expectations out of a lot of the new stuff that's available. And yet it just kind of exceeds expectations. So I'm having a great time. It's been a good season. But yeah, so I've been busy. I've been tired. I've been so fucking tired. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, I have missed this. So I'm glad that we're back and recording, because, oh my God, I have fucking missed this so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we don't normally take super long breaks. Even if like we don't record the podcast, we don't take super long breaks from like video chatting for one reason or another, because we're recording reactions or whatever. Like it's been a while since we haven't like face to face spoke to each other in like over a week.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time, and the passing of my aunt didn't help. And just on top of that, schedules just not lining up, so it's been a time, but we're back. Happy to be back. So we're here, we do it.
Yeah, we're back and doing just fine.
Hell yeah.
I never know. Okay, so I don't know how to spell.
Oh, well, I mean, considering the spelling mistakes that we send each other on Discord, that's to be true. But what are you having trouble spelling right now?
Apothecary.
There
are too many vowels.
A-P-O-T-H-E carry, without the second R.
There are too many vowels. I get confused when there are vowels and I cannot hear what they are.
If it helps, A-P-O-T-H-E-carry.
That does help, except carry is then spelt wrong. But yes, I get it, yeah.
I mean, look, if, that's why I said carry, but one R.
Yeah.
Although then again, I guess, like, especially if it were about like a male apothecary, that would help so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because apothecaries have a pot. So, I mean, it just kind of makes sense. It works.
The amount of little, like, memory things that I have been making for my Japanese study like that has been insane. So I've got one, machi. I'm fairly certain, which is town or city. And so I've made a little thing of like, oh yeah, well, obviously you have to go into town if you want to watch a match. Like if you're going to go to a game, you're going to go into the city. And like, so I've got like so many little, because I sent you a video a little while ago of the days of the week. And I was like, Getsuyobi is Monday. And so it's like, you got to get asked to work, and work is shigoto, so it's shigoto go to work on a Monday, where she's getsuyobi into work, you know.
You know what, I'm sad that I haven't gotten any more videos.
I'll have to send more whenever I come up with them.
That was great, because you sent that to me like right as I was going on my lunch break, so I was like, huh, what is this? And I was like, oh, this is great. I like this a lot.
Yeah, whenever I come up with them, I have to send them to you, because I have literally... Okay, well, I'm going to show you this. So I have these cue cards, but then I have these cue cards, but then I have these cue cards.
Holy fucking shit, mate.
Because... yeah, I have all of hiragana and katakana, and they're different, like, versions, because, like, mm-hmm. when you combine them with other ones, they change. And then I have started on some kanji. Yeah. The number one, super easy.
Mm-hmm.
The number two. The number three, except that's upside down.
And then four is whatever it goes sideways.
Four!
Have you seen the clip of the dude that's, like, trying to learn Japanese, and he starts giving the Japanese people shit, whatever, he's, like, mm-hmm. trying to learn kanji? He's like, yeah. one line, right? Makes sense. Two lines. Perfect. Three lines. Four. Why Japanese people?
I have seen that clip, yeah. He's, like, on a variety show or something.
Yeah, it's so fucking funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I've started on kanji, and I'm just trying to learn. I'm trying to learn ones that are applicable to the sentence structures that I'm also learning, so I'm using them as I'm learning them, if that makes sense.
It does.
Because I feel like if I just learn random ones, then I'm going to forget them, or I'm not going to, like, properly know how to use them, you know?
Yep, fair enough.
So, anyway, that's what I've been up to. Times two now, because apparently I had to tell you guys twice what I've been up to.
I mean, hey, absolutely nothing wrong with that. So listen, I know Blue and I have shit talked a lot on here about, you know, having a shokugeki against one another, but I'm sorry, you have to wait. Because a new challenger has decided to try their hand at unseating mm-hmm. me from my cooking mm-hmm. throne. So they have to be dealt with first.
Yeah, gotta knock them away.
Yeah, no, they are very, very quickly going to learn their place in the world of cooking. It's going to be great. And the way that this all came about, so we were at my friend Brianna's concert the other night, and some of you that listen to this will know this, a lot of you will not, but I... Before getting into the content creation game, was trying to get into the music business. Mm-hmm. So I took a lot of steps to try to get into the country music scene. It didn't work out because my voice is much better suited for this rather than for that. So shit was being given back and forth between myself and one of my good friend's wives who sings at our church. And so we were giving each other shit back and forth about going up there to sing with Brianna. And so the topic got brought up of, okay, let's have a competition to see who goes up there the next time. So I was like, fuck it. Cooking competition. Why not? Loser gets to go up there and sing with Brianna. And so we have decided on a pasta dish.
Okay. That's just it? Any pasta dish?
Well, I mean, it's like... Food Wars, you know? Mm. Like, it's literally just a broad concept as long as the main portion of the dish is pasta-related, you can make literally whatever you want.
Is this a good time to post my pregnant humans are ravioli meme?
Yes, it's always a perfect time to do that. Oh, we are either flesh mechs with the baby piloting them or human raviolis, one of the two.
One or the other, and or both.
Yeah, it you know, it's all dependent upon perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, because a mech is a metal ravioli. Although, this is the question of, like, what part is the ravioli? Because if you were to say, like, beef ravioli, you know that it's not the coating that's the beef, it's the middle.
Yeah, so the child's the beef.
So if you're a mech, then it's just a human ravioli with a metal casing.
I mean, I guess whenever you think about it, though, to, like, tie this into anime, I guess Attack on Titan's a lot funnier whenever you look at it that way. People being eaten? Nah, ravioli.
Ravioli.
But I mean, then again, I guess if you look at it that way, I guess skin is technically the coating regardless, or our internals are just the stuffing for the ravioli.
I mean, yeah, but at least that's, like, fused.
I mean, is it though?
Yeah, there's a fascia, the layer under your skin, or, like, the bottom layer of your skin that, like, is I guess it's not really connected to your organs, but it, like, keeps them in.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of what skin is designed to do, is to keep your organs in.
Yeah, but, like, they have to cut through the skin, and then they cut through the fascia as well. It's like under a layer.
Yeah, it's a sack that keeps all your shit in.
Pretty much. Except sometimes it doesn't.
I don't know. I failed every science class I ever took. That's why I love Dr. Stone so much. But yeah, so I've been trying to come up with what pasta dish I want to absolutely decimate her with. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot you could do. You could go for, like, something like lemony and pesto-y with a basil-y, garlicky, nice, like, fresh, summery, flavory thing. You could throw shit to the wall with a cold pasta salad. You could...
God, I would lose so quick.
You could do a lasagna, or...
Lasagna did cross my mind. But I don't know how you elevate a lasagna, though. That's the thing.
Well, Parmesan. I don't know.
I think what I'm going to end up doing is a, like, Cajun chicken Alfredo, but, like, of course, homemade everything.
The pasta included.
I'm very tempted to homemade the pasta, too. I am very, very tempted.
It's not that hard. We used to, my dad has a little Italian pasta roller, and we used to quite often as kids make pasta, because it was quite a fun thing for my brother and I to, like, be, you know, goopy kids playing with dough. So I remember doing that quite a bit, and then my parents would make the sauce, but, like, my brother and I would help make the pasta. So we still have that, but it's quite fun to do that, and you can get little rollers that make the shapes and stuff.
Well, so Brie has a KitchenAid mixer, so I'm tempted to just buy the pasta attachment for that and just let it do all the work, because I can't be bothered.
I mean, that's true. If you have a KitchenAid at your disposal, we have one. I use it for making bread most of the time.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of those things. It was like, I'm tempted to. I'm going to have to test that before I actually do it, because... we all know cooking is my forte. Baking or anything like in that realm of things is not. So I'm very likely to fuck it up. But I figure fresh pasta, fresh Alfredo sauce, like the whole nine yards. And even going to Publix and getting the really expensive, like, grated Parmesan cheese. Because I'm willing to spend extra money on this to ensure that I decimate this competition and leave without a shadow of a doubt that I will be victorious.
Yeah, I mean, we're a cheese family. We always have a selection of good cheeses. Specifically, we are a cheddar family, but, like, British aged cheddar. So like 2-year-old cheddar at the minimum.
Yeah.
But usually we're aiming for, like, a 5-year-old cheddar. Like, that's the good shit.
See, I've never had that old of cheese that I'm aware of. I don't know. I'm ignorant whenever it comes to that. All I know is I like fresh, like, block cheese that I have to shred myself. Shit you get in a bag is just cornstarch. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I don't find that it has much of a flavor. I find that it's almost like a Red Leicester, but not as good at melting. Like, the good point about Red Leicester is that it's a super mild, soft cheese that you can just chuck on a cheese sandwich and it melts super fast and, you know, gets really liquidy and delicious for, like, cheese melts and that kind of thing. A cheddar doesn't have that same level of melting point, and it's not supposed to be that mild. It's supposed to be quite a sharp cheese. And so, yeah, when you get cheddar in bags, it's not quality cheese. It's not good, solid cheese. And it's often mixed with the mozzarella as well. And then they're just melting at different melting points if you're doing them together. And it's just not cohesive. And yeah, it's worth it to spend more on cheese. Costco has a nice cheese selection. They've got a British cheese range where they've got, like, 5 different flavors of cheese. They've got like a red Leicester in there. They've got a smoked cheddar. They've got a, I think it's an apricot cheese. Then they've got a chive cheddar, I think. And then that mushroom that's really fragrant. I don't know. There's a fragrant mushroom cheese in there as well. And it's a nice little box. And they all come in together and it's a nice little box and they have those. But then they also just do the regular like aged cheddar that's in a big old chunk. And it's cheaper and often on coupon. So this isn't a promotion for Costco, but I do recommend going to them if you like cheese. Because you can get it for on coupon quite easy.
I have a Costco membership. I should probably go more often.
Yeah, go to Costco.
You know, I was very tempted for like a promotion gift to myself because fun fact, Costco, you can order A5 Wagyu. So I was this tempted to, if I didn't want to have that experience in Japan, I was this fucking close to just ordering that and doing it here. But fuck it. I'll save it for Japan.
You know what you're going to have to do now is when we're in Japan and you're trying the beef, we're going to have to save some clips outside of that video because we're going to, you know, we're going to make a beef video. But then we're going to have to save some clips outside of that video. And then you're going to have to go and buy the Costco beef and make it at home and do a comparison of the quality of beef to beef. Do a beef off.
I mean, that is true. Because I am tempted because I just have just a little bit of a sneaking suspicion because of the way that the Japan funds are looking, there's going to be a lot left over most likely. So I could probably afford that by the time it's all said and done.
And I mean, second trip to Japan.
Literally, no joke. I am working my ass off to try to convince the whole friend group to go in 26.
Oh my god, that would be so much fun!
So I'm working on it because they are because I've already told them next year's booked with our train trip across Canada. Mm-hmm. But I was like, the following year, come on, let's go.
Yeah, let's all go to Japan. Everybody, we'll all go. We'll get Jen somehow. Ditch the kids. Come, Ken, Jen, kids and Jen makes Ken. Jen, ditch the kids.
Yeah, come on. It'll be fun. It'll be great. Speaking of meetups, though, we've planned our actual first official meetup.
We have. So we are going to be at Animathon in Edmonton this summer. I'm super, super excited. I haven't been to Animathon in years, but I used to go frequently when I was a teenager. I used to cosplay there. First time I ever cosplayed was at Animathon. It's been a while, but it's going to be super fun. We're also going to hopefully be interviewing some cosplayers that we see around the event and getting some good vlog footage. So be excited for that coming this summer to a theater near you. No, I'm just kidding.
Coming this fall.
To a YouTube channel near you.
Two idiots make their cosplay debut together. is that just literally going to be all of our vlog titles? Two idiots do this, that, or the other?
I mean, honestly, it could be.
I mean, I'm here for it. Why not?
Speaking of idiot, I put my matcha on too hot of a temperature on my mug warmer, and now I can't drink it.
Dumb.
I know. It's because I had it on in my... Because I make cappuccinos in a round mug, because cappuccinos should be made in a bowl. And then I put it on there, but then it doesn't capture all the heat of the hot plate, right? So then I have to turn it up to the hottest setting. But I've got my shark mug that Brad got for me here.
I love it.
With my matcha in it. And that's got a flat bottom, so it's absorbing all that heat. So it's way too hot. I didn't change the temperature. And it's also right in front of my mic, so you can hear whenever I pick it up or put it down. Also, my chair is clicking like crazy.
Yeah, I've heard the chair pop.
Yeah, but it's a chair. What am I
gonna also, do? I will say, you've got Mum up there making me jealous. Posting photos of latte art.
Oh, yeah. That's the first one I've done okay since surgery, so I'm pretty chuffed with that.
Yeah, she posted on Instagram, and I was like, bruh, I want this. I want this so bad.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been able to do it. Like, I don't have both the strength and then the flexibility yet to be able to do it consistently, but I'm getting there. Physio's working, which is great.
Yeah, that was part of the conversation that we were having. I was like, I'm so glad that you're healing to the way that you are, because holy shit, it has been a long time for you to get to this point. So
it has been. And I'm happy about it. I'm like, I've still got a fair ways to go with rebuilding strength. I'm now officially weightlifting, which is insane.
Come on, look at you getting so strong.
Yeah, with my 1 pound weight. but I'm also using like different elastic stretch things, bands, that are helping. But my mobility is pretty much as good as it's going to get now. I just want to be able to, like, I still can't do like a push up or like downward dog or whatever. Like, I can't get my wrist completely flat to where I can put weight on it yet. Mm-hmm. So that's the next step. But even if I don't get it to my full range of mobility, I'm actually okay with that. You know, like, just being able to do that last thing is the one thing. That, and when I'm like cupping water to wash my face, those are the two things when I notice that my hand doesn't bend back as much as it should do, is whenever I'm like pushing up from a chair or whatever, and I put weight on it, or yeah, to get water on my face, that's when I'm like, oh, you know, it's slipping and sliding out of my hands, like I can't hold it. But yeah, way better than it has been. And I'm stoked for that.
That is awesome. I'm glad that you are healing. That good.
Yes.
So, speaking of good heels, I almost said Freerun. I was like, no, that's not it. That's not what we're talking about. Can you tell what's been on my mind, though? God, I miss it so much. But no, speaking of good heels, Apothecary Diaries.
Yeah, so I'm stoked about getting back into Apothecary Diaries. I missed it when I wasn't watching it.
I figured you would be. Honestly, I was tempted to do this one ahead of Freerun. But I was like, you know what? No, Freerun takes the cake.
They're both so good, though, and very easy to watch together. They're very complementary shows, Freerun and The Apothecary Diaries. They fit similar aesthetics and similar emotional progressions. So, like, I think they were a perfect pair to release at the same time. And I don't think they stole views from each other. I think they complemented each other very, very well. And it was just a very lucky timing for them to be released during the same season.
Yeah, no, the winter anime season was very well balanced with a lot of the stuff that was running. Because you've also got the one that we're doing next week in Solo Leveling, and they all just played off of one another well. Because you've got the power fantasy, you've got the what takes place after the power fantasy, and then you've got slice of life shenanigans with thriller aspects. That's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, Philly. I realized how much I say that since I was editing last episode. I said Philly, like, to everything you said. I was like, yeah, Philly. Every time you said something, I was so mad at myself. I started cutting them. I was like, no, shut up.
Look, I have realized how much I've been saying, like, yeah, 100% and stuff like that lately, to where I'm like, all right, I really have to fucking diversify. But I also feel like I've tried to be so positive and keep myself in such a, you know, positive mindset to, for one, get me over the hump that I was in after nearly dying at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, try not to do that. Like,
I'm trying not to. Look, after October 18th, I'm fair game again. But until then, no, we gotta make it through that.
We've already planned Canada and then Japan 26 now, so you have to wait at least. Don't worry, I'll get something scheduled for 27 as well. We'll just keep postponing.
That's perfect. But yeah, so I'm like wow, I really need some more adjectives. But it's also like, how much can I be so positive and still, I'm still going to end up repeating the same adjectives because there's only so many for, I guess, agreement whenever it comes to that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, fuck it. But I try to be mindful about how I spread those out now because, again, I realize just how much I was saying it. So like, shit, I got to do better.
It's so funny how much our recording has changed, though, because now when I'm editing it, I see where we're taking breaks to think about what we're going to say, but we're adding in thoughts and even just like pauses or other things to fill our sentences without ums and so like as we used to. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to adapt our speaking style to fit that so that I'm editing out way less because when we're thinking of our next point of what we want to say, we're still talking and entertaining. And it's just, I don't know, it's quite interesting to see how we've subconsciously evolved purely from recording, then editing, being like, oh, I don't like that about the way that I presented this or how I edit, how I sound in this edit or how it sounds in the finished product. And we don't even necessarily consciously change those aspects. We just evolve to no longer have those aspects in our natural speaking style whenever we're recording.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of that comes down to you and I are a lot more comfortable with one another. Mm-hmm. Actually, fuck that. We are as comfortable, I believe, as we can possibly be with one another to the point to where we don't need those filler words as much. We realize each other's cues a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But also we've grown so much as presenters to the point to where we kind of have an idea of where to go. And then it's banter. That's all it is. You and I are literally just sitting here playing off of one another. Now, I will say adding in the video element to this helps because we can see each other to try to play off of those cues a lot better as well. But again, I think a lot of that is just how used to each other and how used to doing this we are. But also, we still give just as much of a shit as we did back then, but it's a different kind of giving a shit. It's a much more relaxed version of giving a shit to where I would rather this be as fun and entertaining as possible rather than just trying to hit bullet points and do certain things because we do this for fun. We literally do this for shits and giggles to appease ourselves and also give y'all something hopefully fun and entertaining to listen to.
Yeah. And on that note of like hitting bullet points, we don't necessarily need to pre-think our thoughts through as much these days than we did back then because we've done this so much, we've compared so much stuff, we've broken down so much content that now, in the moment, we are so much more consistent with picking up on themes and aspects of the show and recognizing them and suggesting them to each other and then realizing more in the moment than we used to be. We used to have to really kind of like analyze before we were able to just jump into it. Now we can kind of jump into it and break it down together, and that has worked for us a lot more. It makes a lot more succinct thoughts, and I feel like we're getting a lot more of the themes better and we're getting across our points better now than we ever were before, just out of practice and just, you know, being able to break things down in the moment.
I wholeheartedly agree, especially for the fact of it's very well documented at this point that you and I have two very different tastes. Mm-hmm. Whenever it comes to anime, you look a lot more at the, you know, animation or more specifically the drawing style of it, whereas I look more at the sakuga and the movement and, you know, we both enjoy the soundtracks, but we like two very different styles of soundtracks. We just have our own differing thoughts and opinions for certain things, but also it's because of that that we're able to bring up different points that the other may or may not agree with. But especially for, you know, the relationship that you and I have, neither of us care to play devil's advocate with the other to try to get points across and just to have not necessarily an argument per se, but that type of, you know, conversation to where it may be a little antagonistic at some points, especially for me, because I'd love to pick at you. But it's just one of those things of, I feel like it just helps grow the conversation and kind of, we also very well know how to play to each other's strengths at this point. So just, it makes it all fun and games.
Yeah. You said Pikachu and that pick at you. And then it reminded me of Pikachu. And then, and then that stupid joke came into my head of, how do you get Pikachu onto a bus?
You Pokemon?
You Pokemon.
Oh, big such fan. A dumb joke. Big fan. Such I love a dumb it, joke. Though. I love it.
But yeah, Apothecary Diaries. We went on a tangent after our tangent ending tangent. So here is another tangent.
And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
So we did go through most of the background for Apothecary Diaries in our previous video, but we'll go through it again because we are good to you.
Yeah. And by that, fuck you. We do what we want.
Yeah.
Apothecary Diaries, drama, mystery, romance. The novel series was written by Natsuhi.
Oh. You good? Stroke?
Trying to read. I should replace my contacts at some point. Hang on one moment. Natsuhyuga. Okay. That has run from October 27th, 2011 to present. Manga written by same individual. It's a seinen. Began publication in 2017 and is still running to this day for a total of 13 volumes. And the anime, which was made by Toho Animation, it began its broadcast on October 22nd of 2023 and ran through March of 2024 for a total of 24 episodes. However, the second season has already been announced, which, you know what baffles me? This had its second season announced before Frieren, but Frieren was definitely the more popular of the two.
Yeah, I guess it's just that Frieren Studio just wanted to withhold the announcement. I don't know, yeah.
I mean, maybe, or maybe because I am unsure just how much of the manga the story for the first season took up. So I'm quite curious because I think, if I'm not mistaken, it only has 10 volumes out, maybe. Again, I'm not 100% certain because, again, it's been a while since we've sat down to record this, especially the Frieren episode. So I'm, again, I'm uncertain, but I do find that curious as to why that is. However, I will eventually purchase the Frieren manga and read it, or I could just read it on the Shonen app because it's fucking sold out everywhere and it pisses me off.
Yeah, it's been so incredibly popular. I feel like it's taking up everybody's shelves of their manga collections. Yeah, I can see why it's sold out.
Speaking of manga shelves, my 11th volume of Dress Up Darling arrived today and I'm so very happy.
Such excited.
I'm so happy. I should read that at some point.
Yeah.
I now have 11 volumes and I've read zero.
Yeah, you should sit down. You should take an afternoon to just sit in the warm sun and make some nice, like, fancy water or lemonade or something. Or you're from the South, so sweet tea.
Fancy water. What the fuck is fancy water? Is that another word for tea?
No, when you put like mint in it and lemon and like berries or flowers or something, and you just let them sit in the glass and like slowly try and make tea, but they're not enough to make tea, so it's just slightly ambiguously flavored water.
I
Don't you ever do that in the summer where you get into the garden and you're like, oh, there's some lemon balm. I'll shove that in some water and just sip around the giant leaf. Like,
look, okay. I love you. I do. But what? What the fuck?
It's a thing. It's a thing to have like mildly flavored water.
I would rather drink water from the hose. And I haven't done that since I was a child.
It's a thing. You're going to get people telling you that it's a thing because it's a thing. It might be a dumb thing, but it's still a thing.
I'm not saying it's dumb. Look, everybody has a preference. And if you do that, that's perfectly fine. I am not going to judge you for any reason, shape, form, or fashion. However, do what?
We've been judged.
But no, if I'm going to have water, I'm just going to have water because water is refreshing and tasty, especially on a hot day. You know, it's a perfect way to cool off. You know, it's wonderful.
But you could put some mint leaves in it.
Why would I taint something just so wonderful and refreshing with flowers from the garden or, you know, random other things from outside? I live in the South. Pollen is bad enough. I don't need to pollute my water with other with other things.
Nah, it's a thing. Maybe it's a thing because I grew up with a family of people with green thumbs. So maybe it's just like a gardener's thing, but like it's a thing.
No. I realize it's a thing. I realize people do it. And I also realize the whole, you know, letting people, you know, floating berries or other, you know, citrusy things like it's lemons pretty. And oranges and limes and all that other stuff. Yeah, it's pretty, but does it really add that much to the water, though?
Yeah.
Other than pizzazz, does it really add anything to the water?
Sometimes you just want a sprinkle of pizzazz.
I mean, I could do that, but then I could also just bedazzle my glass.
You could bedazzle it and put a lemon in it.
Is bedazzling still a thing?
I don't know.
I don't know either. We're tangenting.
For the fourth time, Apothecary Diaries.
Your turn.
Yeah. Okay, so. I don't think I gave any background information on Apothecary Diaries last time for like the ratings and stuff, because obviously you hadn't finished, so that was kind of irrelevant at that time.
Yeah.
But it's done now, so it's relevant. So on Anime Planet, it scored a 4.62 out of 5, or a 9.24 out of 10, if my math is correct. It also scored an 8.92 out of 10 on My Anime List, giving it an average score, if my math is correct, of 9.08 out of 10. It also has a drop rate of 1.81%. This is what I was talking about when it came to Frieren last week. So Frieren, I actually don't have it written down.
It had like here. A 5.6 or some shit like that.
Yeah,
it was high.
The drop rate was high. I actually don't get why I didn't. Where did I write that down if it's not in my notebook?
I'm pulling up the spreadsheet now. Give me a moment.
I didn't put it in the spreadsheet.
Did you not?
No, because it was supposed to be in my notebook and then it would go on the spreadsheet after it was in my notebook. I haven't updated it yet.
But you've also edited the episode twice now.
Yeah, because I'm inconsistent. I even have a little note, a sticky note right here that says when the right ratings and all the background and chicken hats go on at 17 minutes, guys, just so you know, in the free run episode.
Chicken hats go on at approximately, I have no fucking clue what timestamp this is actually going to be. I'm just bantering at this point and giving you more work. I apologize.
I give myself enough work. But this is what I was talking about with Frieren, is that Frieren had something like, I'm going to say just approximately a 5% drop rate. And I was saying that I found that surprising because the amount of hype around the show meant that I, like, I was expecting it to have a kind of Jujutsu Kaisen vibe drop rate, which is about like a 1% drop rate. It's just under a 1% drop rate. And that's our lowest drop rate. Frieren, I felt, had the same kind of hype around it as Jujutsu Kaisen. So I wasn't expecting it to have like an average drop rate of about 5%, which is a good drop rate, but it's just kind of average. And so then when I was calculating the Apothecary Diaries for it being 1.81%, I was like, that's kind of what I was expecting Frieren to have, and also the Apothecary Diaries, but I was surprised that Frieren's was over 2 times more than the Apothecary Diaries drop rate, you know?
Well, like, we also got to Frieren right after it ended. Like, it ended the week that we covered it. So I'm curious if by the time we redo the drop rates at the end of the year, if it'll be different. Or you're going to recalculate it now.
I'm
going
to do it right now, because I'm also curious. Equals. This is actually good for me anyway, because I don't know what the drop rate is, so I can't add it to the spreadsheet. Okay, so it has dropped.
Oh?
It is now a 3.68% drop rate.
And I have a feeling it's going to keep dropping as well as more people wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Frieren ran for 28 episodes. So it had a longer runtime than a lot of standard 2-core. I mean, it was worth it without a shadow of a doubt, but it did run quite long. So that could have a lot to do with it. And also, again, it definitely isn't everyone's cup of tea, but I feel like most people that watched it fell in love with it. Again, just it depends on what you're looking to get out of an anime. Like, if you're a shonen fanatic that cares about nothing but battles, Frieren isn't really for you. Like, does it have those moments? Absolutely. Especially at the end. But outside of that, it doesn't fulfill that niche, but it fills every other void that you could ever want out of a fantasy anime.
Yeah, it definitely leans way more on the fantasy element and the adventure element as opposed to like combat and conflict. There's more internal conflict than there is external conflict for Frieren.
Mm-hmm. It's like we had talked about last week. It is, without a doubt, my favorite fantasy anime of all the time. Like, I think it set the bar for fantasy anime going forward.
Mm.
But it's, again, the fact that its drop rate was so high was shocking, but I'm glad it's coming down because it shows that people didn't forget about it.
Yeah, yeah. But back to the topic at hand for the 100th time. The Apothecary Diaries. So it is rated a PG-13. I think that is appropriate, but I do think that there are aspects of the show that a 13-year-old wouldn't understand. What I mean by this is political, societal, and just relationship complications that happen throughout the show are not just historical, so more complicated because of the fact that they're not in our everyday surrounding environment, but also there's a lot of nuance that's thrown throughout in them, and people that aren't good characters or bad characters, they are complicated characters that you have complicated emotions towards. And I don't know that a 13-year-old would be able to understand the depth of the show. So while I think that they would enjoy it, it's a very pretty, visually appealing show, and there are aspects of it that I think that they would find funny and some things that they would get, I don't think a 13-year-old would be able to understand the entirety of the show. And I don't even necessarily think that I am able to understand the entirety of the show, because I'm not super well-versed in the knowledge of palace like life. Like, I feel like there's still things that I could learn more about history and then watch the show and discover more about it, because of the fact that it does seem to be quite it doesn't really explain much is I guess what I'm trying to say. The show projects itself on the understanding that you as a viewer are intelligent enough to get what it's trying to say. So there's no real explanations of palace dynamics, political dynamics, or anything else within this world. It just assumes that you know already. And whilst I don't think that that is, for most viewers, a problem. Like, I absolutely watched it, enjoyed it, and had a great time. I do think there is an extra layer of understanding and appreciation that you could have if you had a much deeper knowledge base of the historical circumstances that these characters are in. So, yeah, I think there's like elements that a 13-year-old just wouldn't understand, because I think there's elements that I'm not quite getting to the fullestness of their capacity because I don't have education in the area, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think a lot of that too. And I think a lot of the reason that they left those particular points out is because, for one, they were never really pertinent to the overall topic at hand, but two, it did make a grandstand of, at the beginning of every episode, it gave the warning of, this is not based off of any particular time period, everything is fictional, like, none of the characters shown here are from any, like, actual point in history, so don't take it seriously. And I feel like if it had given a lot more in-depth to that, then it would have shown which era that it's talking about and like tried to pinpoint it more towards what was going on. So I feel like it suited the narrative of, hey, this is a work of fiction, don't dig too much into it type thing.
Fully. And I think that with that, that has allowed them to be able to dive into other areas. But I can't even say for sure, because I don't know if this is like, I couldn't say if this was like, oh, this is the costume design of the character design is historically accurate to whatever period. I don't know. So I don't know if they have based it in a specific era, if they have, you know, based it around a specific palace, even just for like, not necessarily even characters, but character design or historical references. I don't get those because I don't have education in this area, but it actually does kind of inspire me to like learn more about it. So that then I could watch it again and be like, oh, this is from this time period. This element was clearly influenced by this aspect or whatever. And I feel like certain people who are very interested in history could come away from this show with a very different appreciation than what I have from just an artistic standpoint. Because I do feel like it's clearly based in history, just not based in a specific part of history. And I'm curious about what influences they drew from, what aspects they included, and how they created this story based on, on what? I don't know. And I want to know more about it. But I do feel like if you have that knowledge already, then there's an extra level of understanding that you would have about the show.
Yeah, it's one of those things of, I wish I knew more about this period of, you know, history, because I love history. So it's definitely something that I would have liked to have known more of. And I definitely left the show with kind of that wanting of more knowledge. But so that's just me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. We did say before that this episode is based on the second core of the Apothecary Diaries. If you want to listen to our opinions on the first core, we do have another episode that came out a few weeks ago from that, so you can go back and listen to that. I will give a general overview of the show, though, because we did go into the background more in depth on this episode than on the previous episode, because obviously the previous episode was made when the show wasn't done. So I'll give a big overview, then we'll do spoiler chicken hats, and then dive into the second core. So Mau Mau is the daughter of an apothecary, and she has grown up in the pleasure district of the capital city of the mystical country that they're living in. I'm assuming Japan still, but could be a made-up country. Like we said, they've said very clearly at the beginning of every episode that this is just based on, you know, imagination. So could be a different country. They never specify. And she's grown up in the pleasure district of I assume the capital city. And she is very, very knowledgeable and very excited and loves to learn about apothecary practices. When she goes through some shenanigans and ends up living and working in the palace grounds in the imperial court. And over time, it's about her relationships between her and the other members of this higher society, but with her also being not an employee of them, but like kind of not really less than with her station in the world and their station in the world. And it's about their dynamics. And then it's also about different mysteries that are happening, her proving herself as being capable. There are several long mysteries that travel throughout the entirety of the show, but it's wrapped up in small mysteries. So we get little segments of mysteries and then this big continuous thread that still hasn't even been fully revealed, but we've had more and more hints. And I think we all know kind of where it's going now, but at the end of this final season, there's still mystery to go, which is good because we've already said that it's been approved for a second season. So hopefully we can have some of those questions that we're left with still wrapped up. But it's a very, very good show. It's very beautiful. It's very interesting and very enlightening to a different side of history that I'm not familiar with at all. I spent my entire childhood learning about King Henry VIII. Like, I don't know about this side of history. So this was very interesting for me to watch. And I highly recommend that you guys give it a watch.
I will also second this recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken hats?
Chicken hats, yes.
Whoops, wrong one. There we go. That's the right one.
Disgusting.
It's fine. I have worse on here.
And swiftly moving on. Mal now.
Not like that, you kinky bitch.
Hoist by my own petard.
Anything you say, Cannon, will be used against you in the court of Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Except you do all the audio editing now, so.
That's true. That is very true.
I'm going to need you to send me all of the good audio bites from the episodes that I can use as, blackmail.
I mean, I'm going to be sending you all of your audio bites. You know that, right?
No, we have a general understanding here. I pick on you with the soundboard.
Yeah, but we could flip that, you know. What's that song?
No.
Put it in reverse, flip it.
Oh yeah, it's that one Beatles song, you know, put the thing down, flip it, and reverse it.
That's the one with Gwen Stefani, right?
No, I think it's Missy Elliott. I think
is that it? Right?
I don't know. I've literally never listened to that full song. Literally, all I know is put the thing down, flip it, and reverse it.
I actually think it's before my time. I think it came out when I was alive, but I don't think I was like listening to music.
Hang on one moment. Put the thing down, flip it, and reverse it. Work It by Missy Elliott. And it released in 2002.
Yeah, so I was alive, but not really listening to music, unless you count, like, Postman Pat, but, you know. And with that being said, we've gone on another tangent. Back to the Apothecary Diaries. We're bad today. Last episode, we were, like, right on track and spoke about Freya the entire time. Today, barely spoken about the Apothecary Diaries.
Can you tell it's been a minute since we've talked?
It has.
I think we even talked about in the Freerun episode how we had, like, been talking so much because we were doing so much shit. And then we did so much shit, and now it's been like 3 weeks, and we're like, fuck, we haven't got to get our ADHD out.
Okay, you're going to have to dive into it, because I'm clearly not able to keep a subject.
I don't know where First Core ended and Second Core began.
Neither do I, so. Because I watched too much when we recorded the First Core, and now I'm at, like...
Yeah, because you kept watching after that.
I did keep watching a little bit, and then I had to tell myself to stop...
Whereas for me, I was like, no, not happening. I'm gonna move off. I can speak.
Yeah. Okay, so I think the main chunk of the Second Core is surrounding Mau Mau's father reveal. Oh, except we did put chicken hats on, okay. Except we didn't.
Yeah.
But we did. And yeah, so it's about her and Khan. Can. One of them. Blacken.
Strategist fuck.
Yeah. Dude. Creepy dude. And the reveal of him. Because up until this point, he has been a, like, sexually creepy, weird old guy who, for the vast majority of his introduction into Mama and him going to the Pleasure District, we have assumed is after Mama in a way that is sexual. Because of the fact that that's, like, he's in the Pleasure District, he's specifically requesting her. She was raised in the brothel. Like, these are, that's, they were very clearly leading us to that conclusion. And mm-hmm. so then when Jinshi kind of reveals that, oh, that's actually Mama's real dad, it throws a whole twist onto this deeper subplot that they were clearly setting up within the first half of the show.
And then plus, the first core ended off with Mao Mao being released from her contract inside the palace.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much from episode 13 on, she gets rehired at the palace because she missed it. And Jinshi missed her. And it was just like this whole thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, she's back at the palace, but she's in the outer court, not the inner palace.
Yeah. And her responsibilities then change and she's given a lot more freedom. Which is great for story progression and great for character progression because Jinshi doesn't really give a shit what she's doing necessarily. So long as her loyalties lie with him. That's kind of his main shtick with her is that he wants her attention. He wants her to be around him. He wants to have not control of her, but protection over her. And so that's kind of her aspect there. Like she's not, yeah, her responsibilities are very different.
Yeah. So it was a lot of it is centered around the strategist dude figuring out who he is and why he's so interested in Mao Mao. The plot points that were happening in the first one of like the mysteries of why people were dying continue to ramp up and turn into like a bigger overarching plot point to where now you're seeing how everything is just interconnected and it does a really good job of weaving everything together as it goes along.
Yeah. So I
was a big fan of that and the whole overarching subplot of this chick literally faked her death and brought herself back. And I'm like, that's a good plot point. That's dangerous as fuck, but that is a great plot point.
Yeah, she chose the Juliet route.
Yep.
And yeah, I agree with you. The intrigue of having it start off as a show with just these small little couple of episode or episode long mysteries and giving us those to like introduce us to the characters, set the scene, create the vibe of the story, and then slowly trickle in the long plot to then reveal that all of those individual little mysteries were actually stages of this bigger plot was so interesting. It was so intriguing how they, because I would have been happy with those have just been little subplots and then the little plots and then the big subplot didn't even necessarily have to relate to those. So for them to reveal that they were actually catalysts for this bigger event that is the revealing aspect, because this large event then reveals that Jinshi isn't who he says that he is, or isn't, you know, the enough that he's like presenting himself to be. And this is Mao Mao's like reveal for that was so brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the show, it does a phenomenal job of like stringing things together and giving foreshadowing to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, not as big a fan of the opening and ending this core than I was the first. I much more enjoyed the first core's stuff, but I did enjoy a lot more of the jokes and stuff and like Mao Mao slowly revealing more of herself, especially over her intrigue with the, you know, wanting to figure out the, like how she managed to off herself and then revive herself. Like that level of like seeing herself like crack and become almost kind of sadistic in a way of how she's like, she wants to figure that out and she'll do whatever she has to get her hands on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a really cool point to where I was like, I like that character development. That's really good.
Yeah. And with that element, that was kind of the first time that we also saw that Mao Mao doesn't have a complete encyclopedia of apothecary knowledge in her brain. You know, she, for the first time, really properly, didn't know something and didn't get how that happened, and had found someone who was more knowledgeable in an area than she was. And up until this point, the only person she's respected in that same field has been her adopted father. Everybody else that she has met has been incompetent. So to reveal another character that she has, that has something that she wants to learn from, like she wants to gain, adds another level of Mao Mao not being a invincible character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We also get the reveal that Jin Shi is taking a medication to basically withhold puberty from him to keep the appearance that he is an Anak.
Yeah, because we find out he's 19. He's not actually 24 or just in his 20s in general. Mm-hmm. He's definitely younger. It alters his voice as well. Like, it does a lot of stuff to where it like changes who he is, which makes me feel a little bit better about the whole, like, you can tell he's falling for Mao Mao.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes it a little bit less uncomfy.
Yeah, because she's what, like 16?
I think so. Yeah, so that was very, very uncomfy.
Yeah.
For a bit, but it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, I don't hate that as much.
Yeah. I'm with you on that as well. I think in our previous episode, we did speak about the fact that if they are going in the romantic angle, that's kind of weird. But with this reveal, that makes a lot more sense. And I think it's interesting because now Mama knows that he's taking medication, but she doesn't know what medication it is that he's taking, because she has to go and pick it up from the dealer. but she didn't inquire as to what it was about. Yeah, and it's clear that he is, like, we don't have an official title, or like it hasn't been blatantly said, but it is clear that he is royalty.
Yeah. But then not only that, but he, like, the age thing definitely describes his like immaturity level as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely made a lot more sense as far as I was concerned as well. It checked a lot more boxes of, oh, okay, that explains his behavior a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. It gives him this edge that he had about his character that was always kind of very cheeky, now has depth,
mm-hmm.
which was very smart. I think this show has continued to reveal itself in the second core as being an intelligent show. It introduced a lot of themes and topics and mysteries in the first half that we thought were complete, but in the second core, it's turned out that hardly any of them actually were. And all of them have been built upon, even if it's just through relationship or character development. And now I'm so excited for the second season because I can see how they've already set us up for more mysteries to be resolved even then. And it's kind of given us permission to speculate, this second core has.
It 100% has. It's answered a lot of questions. It's done a lot of foreshadowing to show where the show is going to go. Left off on one hell of a cliffhanger with the whole fake death and Mao Mao's now relentless search to figure out, you know, what happened and how she'll be able to get a one-up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But also just to continue to see the character growth across the board for everyone, because you're slowly getting it out of people. I'm very curious what's going to happen with her mother and father now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just expect that her mother is going to die.
I think so, but also I have a quarrel with her mother at the end.
Mm.
Because you see throughout the, you know, throughout the second core that her mother, like, the rash has spread all over her arms, her chest, her face. But then once Home Dude shows up, none of that's on her anymore. So I don't know if they just forgot to draw it or what, but it's like Home Dude showed up and she's magically healed of all of these ailments. And I'm like, I don't think that's how that works.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. I saw it as his vision. because he can't see faces, right? So when he was in that moment and he saw her, I saw it as them showing it through his eyes as opposed to her actually not having the sores. But maybe it was that way, but I saw it as what he was seeing as opposed to what reality was.
I'm still docking points because that it's like you talk about ruining the immersion. And I was like, okay, that's taken me out of it a little bit because I really enjoyed it up to that point. And I was honestly curious because I was hoping that he would, you know, make a point of being like, oh my God, I did this to you. What the fuck have I done?
Yeah, but he kind of just didn't. I mean, he did, but he didn't do that to her. She did that to herself, if that makes sense.
I mean, true, but he...
If she had just told him that she was pregnant and that she wanted to be with him.
Or, you know, if he had, you know, just showed back up instead of taking a 3-year sabbatical away.
Yeah, but like, in this time period, people can't just hop on a flight, you know? Like, shit happens. I mean, I get that he said that he would be back in 6 months and he wasn't. But he had no obligation to her at that time. I mean, that sounds so shitty, but he didn't. Like, she was providing a service that he was paying for. He cancelled that service because he was leaving. She had the expectation that he was going to pick up on that service again, and he didn't because he wasn't back.
But also, like, how would she have told him because he was away before she ever found out? Like, they didn't meet up again.
She planned it. That's what Mau Mau said. She said that they...
Yeah, she planned it, but she, like, still, there's a lot more inner workings to that than, you know...
I think he holds responsibility. I think she holds more responsibility.
Again, it's one of those things of, I think it's kind of, I lean more towards the 50-50 side of things. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's kind of evenly split because she did plan that, but also dude still stayed away. Like, if you love someone, why would you stay away? Like, what would keep you from that? Because dude just went away for 3 years. Like, he didn't talk about anything that happened in that time. And even he said, he was like, you know, I was just going to stay away for 6 months. And then it turned into 3 years. Like, if you love somebody, you make your way back. Like, you take your happy ass back.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he was doing in those 3 years for sure. But, like, I'm angry with him, but I'm more frustrated at her. Like, I just wanted to see her take action. And because she didn't take action... He didn't take action. And I mean, either of them could have taken action immediately, but like he had just been kicked out by his dad and kicked out of the country, told to fuck off because of everything that happened. And I don't know, like there's a station difference. Obviously she has to do what she has to do. And I'm not denying that. It's a shit situation all around.
It really is. Like there's so much of an, like, catch 22 with all of this to where, like, I have my issues with both parties for sure. And so that's why I'm just kind of at the 50-50 split thing, because they're both wrong. And two wrongs don't make a right by any means. That's why I'm just like, fuck it. But either way, like, that moment just took me out of the show completely. Because even if that was, like, from his perspective, it doesn't get rid of the rest of the sores. Like, the only thing he wasn't able to see on people were their faces, except for her.
Yeah, I mean, that was how I saw it, at least. In my memory, there was a shot where she had, like, her eyebrow missing, or the same kind of face that she had previously, where her hair was, like, over it. And then he goes and walks over to the bed and sits down, and then there's another close-up shot of her face, and her face looks different. I don't remember if that's actually what happened, but in my head, that's how it plays out. And so that's how I got the interpretation that this was through his eyes. But I can't remember if that's exactly true. One thing I did want to talk about was Mau Mau's missing fingertip that she said grew back.
Yes. That was a full-fledged fucking finger.
No. Well, there was a full-fledged finger that was her mom's finger. It was her mom's wedding ring finger, which I thought was very interesting. Because I don't know if wedding rings were a thing then, or like in this part of the world then. Or if that was just a coinky dink that they chose that finger, but that was definitely her left ring finger. So
But that finger was still on her hand whenever it showed the bandaged hand.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't there.
I legitimately remember seeing, like, there being a bandaged finger there.
No, I looked where that for was. It. I looked for it. It was missing.
Like whenever home dude went in there, because I didn't think about it up until that point. But whenever home dude went in there.
Home dude might have imagined it, but it wasn't there in a previous episode. Because I looked for it.
I'm not disagreeing, because, again, I didn't look for it there. But whenever I looked at it while home dude was in there, it was there.
Yeah, no, the fingers are, the big one was the mom's, and then there's a little tiny little brown dot that is Mau Mau's fingertip. Mm-hmm. So there's two. And with Mau Mau's fingertip, she said it grew back, and she referenced her little pinky finger. I don't know if that's legit. I don't think a fingertip grows back.
You know, hang on, let's do some more research. This has been the episode of research.
At least not with a nail.
Can your fingertip grow back? Yes, human fingertips can regenerate lost tissue after trauma, but the regeneration level depends on the integrity of the proximal nail matrix. For example, children can regrow the tip of an amputated finger if there's some nail left, the wound isn't stitched up, or there are stem cells beneath the base of the nail.
Okay. So maybe it could have grown back if she didn't cut. But a baby's little tiny baby finger with nail left over would be such a tiny amount of finger. Like, if you think of an infant and their little finger with leaving nail residue.
But you also got to think, whenever you're in your infant stages, that's whenever your stem cells are at their highest. So that's whenever your body is the most likely to regenerate stuff like that.
I mean, okay, maybe. Maybe, okay, I'll give it to her that she grew it back. I'll give it to her. But that was the bit that took me out. Like, the fact that there was no even scar or anything. And I know it's a fingertip. How do you animate that? But, like, couldn't they put, like, a little mark on the nail?
Yeah, no, I agree. It also was a point for me too. Don't worry. But that's kind of the way that I look at it is, oh, you know, stem cells, they're the highest whenever you're an infant. So you could be, I don't fucking know. I don't know biology. Again, I failed every science class I ever took.
I will give it to her then. I will. That's new to me. I did not know that babies could regrow their fingertips, but there we go.
We've learned a thing. Hooray!
We have learned a thing. We get the introduction of a new wife to the Emperor, though, at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's true. She's, like, apparently, like, somebody that was in favor with the other Emperor or some shit. I don't know. She definitely doesn't seem to be very likable.
No, she's going to be a sketchy character for sure. And also, the wife that had the baby in the first core is pregnant again.
And we don't know whether she's having a boy or a girl. So will the Emperor get a true heir? Find out next time on Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, even though Jinxi is his, but is.
Are you spoiling things that we don't want to talk about?
It's not spoiling, it's speculation, because I haven't gotten that far in the manga. But is.
I guess we're going to find out at some point, won't we?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he was the swapped at birth baby that is.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Even though he and the Emperor do not favor in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
I think he takes after his mom. His real mom. But
where is the mom?
Well, she just left because her baby died, but didn't die because was raised as him.
Sus.
That's my speculation and theory, and that's where I think they're taking it with us, because I think that scene where they're, like, standing opposite each other and they're looking at each other before she leaves, I think that'd be like, we know our secret, but nobody else does, so we can't have a relationship, but also you're my mom. Shit. That's what I think that was.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
We will find out at some point.
Also, I have a bone to pick with the show.
Okay, what's the bone?
I messaged you this because I had to tell somebody. This show does a phenomenal job with animation. It is gorgeous. Its movements are fluid. That dance of Mau Mau in that last episode was fucking gorgeous. That was so well animated. But the horses. The fucking horses were the most garbage, shit, atrocious, abomination of 3D CGI bullshit I have ever seen in my fucking life. It was so bad. So fucking bad. I am still so pissed. That took me all the way out of the show. Like, as soon as, again, I stopped what I was doing to message you to say, what the actual fuck are these horses? Because it's bad. It's so bad.
Yeah.
God. I've seen PS1 textured horses look better than that. Like, that looked like if you were to put a fucking horse in Super Mario 64 and be like, here you go, hit your horse, you can pull your coverage. You like, got
four pixels, make a horse.
Like, oh my God. There are more polygons in my left pinky than that shit. It was bad. It was so bad. I cannot.
That's funny.
Apologies. I had to get that out because everything else about the show was incredible. You're telling me you couldn't take an extra 2 fucking seconds to just sketch over the horse. I wouldn't have cared if you made it a 2D stick figure. I would have appreciated that more than that 3D hunk of fucking garbage that you served to me on a platter to be like, oh, you look at this great thing. We have horses. Fuck you and fuck your horses. Get them out of here. God, that was so bad.
Oh, that's really funny. That's really funny.
That's like Dead Man Wonderland, those last 3 episodes of dropping the fucking ball level of animation, because holy shit, every fucking horse in that show was awful.
Yeah, let's. So for season 2, goals for season 2, better horses.
Literally, I could care less if they fucking promise Neverland the shit out of season 2 if they fix those fucking horses. But if they don't, I am going to be so angry. I will be so angry. I will give the show a 1. I will give it the lowest rating we've ever given anything on this podcast if they don't fix those horses.
I'm so curious as to, I can't remember what the horses look like in the manga. I'm going to see if I can. No, I don't see one in this volume. I'd have to look for the other volumes, but I'll knock over the blocks if I.
Like, dude, you know what I'm talking about? Like, did you notice what I was talking about?
I did notice, yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. Sorry, I had to get that rant out because we talked about, you know, that other stuff taking us out of the show. No, that took me all the way out.
Oh, the one thing with the dance at the Mamo's dance at the end that you said was so gorgeously animated, and it was, but I have a bone to pick with it because I specifically mentioned last week on the Freeword episode how I really appreciated that the characters had rib cages. Mamo did not have a rib cage. In that dance, she was a full like actual hourglass as opposed to an hourglass with a rib cage. She was a U on either side, and I was like, girl, you cannot breathe, you do not have any ribs. So just putting that out there, because yeah, no ribs. But she did look beautiful, and it was a beautiful dance, but yeah, she didn't have any ribs.
It was so well animated. But again, even that took me out because it immediately made me think of the horses. And then I was pissed again. Oh, I don't know why it pissed me off so much, but it really did. I was so fucking angry.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it because they spent so much time clearly on so many other aspects that, like, it's so beautiful that they spent all this time on it, and the foliage and the costume design and even comedic things. They spent so much good quality time on, like, facial expressions and the makeover, like Jushi's makeover where he tries to disguise himself to be able to inquire about something that we don't know quite yet. That was so well done that they were able to just subtly change his face to make him look different. As a way that Mao Mao could have actually done in real life that wouldn't affect the way that people are like, oh my God, you're wearing like somebody else's face, you know? Like, it was, those were so well done that you see something that wasn't well done and you're like, okay, but I know that you can do better. Like, why did you not do that?
Mm-hmm.
If you need a recap episode, have a recap episode, but don't give us those horses.
I mean, and you know, it's literally pull the Demon Slayer of, okay, you rendered it in 3D, so just draw over it. In 2D, just cover it up because it's not going to look as bad. Like I would have been so much happier with literally anything else, but it just stood out because it's clearly this 3D rendered model in a 2D environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like either all or nothing, like make it all 3D or 2D and just do whatever you have to do. Hell, don't even show the fucking horses moving. Like show a side shot from like belly up.
Mm-hmm.
Like do whatever you have to do. It's like they've never drawn a fucking horse in their life. They just imported a fucking whatever stock model was in Adobe Animation and was like, fuck it, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I realize I'm shit talking a lot because the show was absolutely gorgeous. And I'm sure they worked their asses off on that to where if that's the only thing they compromised on, that's far and okay.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, like it just pulled me out of the show so much. So I apologize about bitching so much about it because it really is such a small detail. But it got under my skin because I see how much of everything else that they could do.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that these points that we hyperfocus on, we hyperfocus on them because of the fact that they break our immersion, as you said. And that is the purpose of the show, is to transport you to another world. Whatever that world may be, that is the point of entertainment, is to take you out of your life and take you somewhere else. And the second that a show breaks that immersion, the second that a show ruins the illusion of the world that you're in and you enter reality again, it's so hard to jump back into that world.
Mm-hmm.
And that ruins the viewing experience. That is the biggest critique I can have for a show, is to break the illusion. And to not do it in a clever way. Like, Konosuba and some other shows have done a really good job of breaking that fourth wall and bringing you back into reality by pulling you into the show again. This was unintentional. So it wasn't breaking you to pull you back. It was just breaking the illusion. And that destroys the main purpose of the show. So I feel like it's one of the harshest critiques you can have for a show, is if you break that, if you're sitting here and you're watching a show, you're enjoying the show, and then all of a sudden you're back in the room again, that's a problem. That's just a point blank period. It's a problem. It didn't happen for me really during the show, except for the Littlefinger thing, which I've now learnt is accurate. So I will give it to them. That was a me thing, not a them thing. but to happen to anybody, whenever you're viewing a show, I feel like that's very fair criticism. Even if it's something stupid and small, it still ruined the illusion for you.
Yeah, but again, I feel like I just far overplayed that, but it's just I had high expectations because it really set the bar that high, and then I see that, I'm just like And yet, if we ever watch Overlord, they're really bad about doing a lot of their monsters in CG, but they are consistent about that. Like, you're guaranteed whenever you see a monster in Overlord, it's going to be 3D CG.
Mm.
To where, especially because of the scale they do it, like, if you're having a massive battle scene, I'll allow it. Because having to hand animate, like, 500 or 1,000 small things, I will 100% allow that. But a horse.
Mm.
A fucking horse. okay, I'm fine. I'm over it. I'm off my soapbox.
No, I totally get it. But with that said, so that's your criticism. You had that for the horse. You also didn't like that her mom, the visuals changed for that, for her mom's sores and stuff. Was there anything else that you had mentioned?
I mean, again, with the whole OP and ED change, I get it. You changed it, but it didn't do it for me. Like, it was definitely a detractor. Like, it still suited the show fine. It wasn't as good as the first round, which was slightly disappointing. But again, I'm not going to knock it because I still enjoyed it and it didn't take me out of the show like the, you know, first OP of Frieren did.
Mm-hmm. And then positives, you said you liked the increase in comedy aspects.
Yeah, because the increase in comedy was great. The character development was great. Even the, like, world building of the things around them and figuring out more about the characters and who everyone is and how everything is interconnected is absolutely incredible. I love how the entire show was literally just a woven tapestry of just well-connected events that just doesn't reveal themselves until later. Mm-hmm. Big, big fan.
Agreed.
Of that. Like, there's so much to like about the show. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's just, there's just little nitpicky things here or there that are just kind of detractors for it. But outside of that, everything else is just very, very well done.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree. So what do you give it?
8.5.
That's higher than I thought you were going to get. You had some strong criticisms.
I had some really strong criticisms, but looking at them back in hindsight, like, they are small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are small little nitpicky things for overall a vastly enjoyable experience. Like, I had a great time with it. I mean, obviously, you and I loved it to the point to where I purposefully sought out the manga just so I could send it to you. Like, it's one of those things of, I know just how much that show has meant to us, but especially you, because of your background and everything, to where, like, I understand the importance that this show has for the both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can't detract from it just because it had some minor things. Like, although at the time they were very major, but again, looking back on it, like, they are very, very minor critiques for what they are.
Yeah. I am giving it a 9 out of 10. I think it is so, so good. It's completely encaptured me, but it is also completely up my alley. The mystery element, the historical element, the apothecary element are all things that I search for in media in general. They're genres that I specifically search out for. So this just completely appeals to me. It's like, I've read books that are very similar to this. I love this kind of content. So I'm saying that it's a 9 out of 10 with heavy amounts of bias. This is this is right up my alley. I love this show, and I'm so, so excited for the second season and to finish my manga collection, because, as Brad said, he very kindly started it off for me.
And I will also gladly continue to contribute to it, because it's one of those things of, I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. Here's this thing, and then here's this other thing, and then it's just like, oh, okay, well, here's a whole box of shit. Here you go. I'm still disappointed I didn't put any penis confetti in this box, but here we are.
Hey, last time Customs got a nice surprise.
They did, and now every single thing. You know, I have a feeling, right? Whenever I'm going to be on a list to where whenever I fly into Edmonton in August, some dude is going to be there chilling at the desk. They're going to run my passport. He's just going to look at me. He's going to be like, you're
the penis confetti guy.
You're the one who likes mailing dicks. Yeah, that's me. Please don't search me.
Nah, Canada's border control is very chill. It's on the way back that you'll have the issue.
Oh, no. I'm going to get back to the States and be like, heh, good job.
Canada's border control is very chill.
Okay, it'll be fine. As long as I'm, you know, not getting cavity searched because I like to fucking send penis confetti in the mail, we'll be fine.
America's got my fingerprints. You've got my retina scans. You've got, like, yeah, America's. I got pulled into interrogation rooms both times when I went with my high school on school trips to America. Both times I got pulled aside because I was traveling on a British passport with a bunch of Canadians and terrified my teachers. America's border control is way more intense than Canada's is.
And then now you're just going to set off every single metal detector that you ever go through.
Yeah, I actually don't know if I will, but it's titanium, so I expect I probably will. Right? But, like,
I mean, who knows? We'll figure it out in October.
Yeah, we'll find out. But yeah, unless we go through the hands up thingies, which they use for most of them now.
True. I forgot conventions have security.
No, not the convention. Airports now. You don't go through a metal beep beep beep. You go through a blue.
Oh, I thought they. I don't know.
I've
never been inside of an airport, so I have no words.
I was raised in airports.
Good for you.
Right. Well, I mean,
it was
good and also not, because I moved across the world and that comes with good things and also trauma.
That's also very true. I'm going to be traumatized by the time I get off the plane in August, because I'm going to be
terrified. A
giant
in a tiny seat in a tin can in the sky.
Fat guy in a little coat.
And with that.
All right. Let's wrap this bitch up. So we have socials, BNB Anime, literally everywhere you can look. Check it out. We have stickers available at Etsy.com/BNB Anime. Blue also has stickers available at Etsy.com/Blue Francis. You should check them out. They're adorable. Buy them all. Website, BNBAnime.com. Be sure to check out the YouTube, because we got a vast variety of content there coming out all the time.
Yeah.
So shit that you're not getting here on the audio-only platforms, check that shit out. Okay, thanks. Next week, we've got Solo Leveling, which I am very happy, because we've taken a little bit of a break from, you know, good old-fashioned battle shonen since, I think, JJK, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So we've got some fun shenanigans with that one, and then next week we get back into the real fun of things, because we have a special guest joining us for the first time ever on the actual podcast.
Yeah!
So we will get to that whenever we get there, but again, thank you all so much for listening. Blue and I greatly appreciate it. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye!